Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm Stacey Toth of PaleoParents.com. You might also know me as the Broth Lady, or the inventor of the hashtag More Vegetables Than a Vegetarian. I'm the co-author of several paleo cookbooks, including Eat Like a Dinosaur, Beyond Bacon, and the upcoming Real Life Paleo. I like to talk about health at any size, and self-love, and personal acceptance. Specifically, I have a love for lifting heavy things. If you're interested in finding more out about that, you can also find me on Strong Woman Radio.
And I'm Dr. Sarah Ballantyne of ThePaleoMom.com. I'm the New York Times best-selling author of The Paleo Approach and The Paleo Approach Cookbook. I'm passionate about nutrient density and the intersection of diet and lifestyle with health, which really means I just love talking about science.
News and Views, where Sarah and I catch up and you get to listen to our gossip. Sarah, I'm so excited that you made it back from Denver, because I was told by somebody that they told you or gave you something related to a previous visit in Texas, and I'm supposed to ask you about it. So before I even forget, and the podcast hasn't even started officially, I mean, maybe a little bit. Hello, everybody. What happened in Denver with Boss Creek? Glenn?
Related to Texas?
I have no idea.
It was related to Philadelphia, actually.
Ah.
So Glenn from Boss Creek, who, if anybody, I'll just plug Boss Creek Meats right now. They're a great online meat producer, and they have kind of a different model. It's sort of like the CSA of grass-fed meat, and you actually subscribe to a box, and you get you can pick and choose what cuts go in your box. Or I guess you can pick different boxes that have different cuts in it, but then you get that box of meat and sort of predictable, the same cuts delivered to your house on either every 2 weeks or every month type schedule.
This is an epic plug. I want to know what happened.
Okay. So wait, so I got to meet, I mean, I've been, enjoying Boss Creek Meats for months and months and months, and I hadn't got to meet Glenn before. So Glenn came to my event in Denver, cause he lives in Denver, and he gave me these awesome little like wood blocks that have the two photos like lacquered on, or some kind of beautiful way that they're sort of sealed on these beautiful wooden blocks. And one was a picture that I had posted on Instagram of a before and after picture of me. So it was like this picture of me at my heaviest 10 years ago, and then a picture of me from just like the summer. And he gave me that. And then the other one is the selfie that we took at our event together in Philadelphia.
Oh, with the crowd behind us?
With that group of wonderful women behind us.
When I was standing on a chair in a skirt, hoping that no one was seeing my Spanx.
Yes.
Yeah.
That awesome picture. but it's sad because it's such a good picture. I mean, we were having so much fun. And so we've got these big goofy smiles. And then that group of women behind us were just hysterically awesome and funny.
Yeah, that
and
crowd was awesome.
Crowd was so great. So it was, you know, it's this lovely now little memory. And I just, so people know, I like it when you bring me presents when I go on book tour.
And if you're going to bring Sarah a present and we're on tour together, it would really hurt my feelings if you didn't bring me a present.
Yeah.
My favorite present when I'm on the road happens to be homemade bone broth. So right, just saying.
My favorite present so far. No, I can't say that. And now everyone's going to be.
You can't choose a favorite. That's not fair.
Can't choose a favorite.
I can say it in the future. Like that will be my favorite, but I can't like choose a favorite after the fact. That's not fair. Okay. Yeah. So while we're on the subject, we are going to be stuck together for like a whole week in less than a month.
Yeah. A lot less than a month. Are you kidding me?
You sound so enthusiastic. No, it's got to be a month. It's a month because my book comes out 3 weeks from today. Well, and today and people listening is really almost 2 weeks. But and then I'm touring with Matt for a week before you and I tour. So it's got to be 1 month.
Yeah, you're actually touring with Matt for 5 days before you and I tour.
Oh my gosh, so you're telling me that 2 days is the huge difference that you're trying to emphasize here?
Yeah.
Okay, you win.
I'm saying, I'm pretty sure it's like, I have no idea what day of the week it is. I'm completely disoriented. I apologize. Yeah, it's soon. I am kind of looking forward to it.
It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to places, a lot of places I haven't been before.
We're going to cities out of like all of the cities on our list, the only one I've been to, well, Atlanta, because I live here. The only other one I've been to is San Diego. Every other city that you and I are going to together, I've never even been to the city. Like some of them I've flown through their airports, but I don't count that.
No, you don't count that. Like Thelma and Louise adventure,
with
not gone wrong.
Ending.
Yes. And it's going to be a lot of fun. And people should definitely come to the events. We've got packed houses already in a lot of cities. I mean, like over 100 RSVPs. So we need to know if you're coming, because if there's that many people coming to an event, it's a significant effort to plan on the bookstore's part and our part and the publisher's part. So we really need everybody to RSVP to the book signings. It's not to say that you can't come if you don't, or you can't bring a friend if they didn't, but it really, really helps us plan. So please, 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 on the sidebar.
Some of these places we could be dealing with, you know, fire regulation issues and things like that. So we need to know in advance so that we can figure out, you know, what our other options are to handle those kinds of crowds. So it's cool, though.
Very cool. So if you're interested in finding out, you know, what cities, and you missed previous podcasts where we've listed them all off, it's in the sidebar of both of our blogs. Sarah's got some other events that she's doing as well, and we've got some events that we're doing, but we're doing, I think, 7 days together. So that's seven cities or something ridiculous. Like, we're doing a city every single day.
It's seven cities in 7 days is what we're doing together.
Yeah. So we tried. It's going to be exhausting for us, but we tried to maximize what we could give you all. And instead of exploring Phoenix and doing the things that we want to do, we're hopping right on a plane and going to another city the next day. So, that said, really super stoked. I get to hold a copy of Real Life Paleo on Thursday, which means by the time this airs, you should like go check out all my social media, because I'll be doing geeky jazzy hands and like being all so excited about Real Life Paleo being born, so to speak. So, I mean, it's probably printed somewhere right now and about to be FedExed to me, for what that's worth. So that's super exciting. And, so I just wanted to ask you about Denver. I officially opened House of Gains. So the next time you come visit me, you can come flip tires. I had ladies come over last night, and people who, Heather from Virginia's for Hunter Gatherers and Nicole from Merritt and Fork, which are both local paleo bloggers, came and flipped tires for the first time. It was so cute, like seeing them be so proud and accomplished. Like the first time you flipped one at Nova and you were like, I can't do it. I can't do it. And then I told you to stop saying that and you did it.
I think I just want to point out that the coaching was a little bit more sophisticated than that. And you actually helped me get into the right form in order to be able to use the right muscles to do it. And there was a little bit more to it than just telling me that I could. Yeah. It was a little bit more complicated than just believe you can.
So they had that moment yesterday, which was super exciting, in my house, like with my stuff. And so
have a whole pile. I saw the picture. You have a whole pile of tires.
Yeah, we have four tires.
What weights are they? I'm curious.
200, 400, 600, 800 is what I asked for. But Viv and I believe that it's more like 200, 400, 500, 1,000. Because Viv and I tried to lift the big tire together. Like, I don't know if you know, but like team lift big tires is a thing, like in CrossFit, like whatever. This is a normal thing. And if it was 800 pounds, then each of us would be flipping a 400 pound tire, which each of us can do single motion, which means like we can literally lift it up without stopping at our hips and just like lift it. So if we were both doing an 800 pound tire, we would have had no problem with it. But we had problems lifting it. So we think it's like more like 1,000 or over 1,000 pounds, that big tire. So I got to get like a scale that can weigh it. I gotta borrow one from somebody to find out how much they weigh. But in the meantime, I won't be flipping it alone in the near future. But I'm super excited to have a big one that challenges people, because Viv's like, oh, that's totally a goal for me now. I want to flip that tire. So, yeah, so House of Gains is the name of our gym. It's open. Did you check out my tutorial thing? Come on, Sarah. Well, I'm linking to a recipe.
I was honest and I didn't like.
Yeah, I appreciate you not lying to me. Well, you're going to be featured in the one on Thursday, which is a pumpkin tutorial. So, everybody listening, we will have had three up by the time this podcast airs. We did apples, we did spaghetti squash, and now we're doing pumpkin. I'm super excited. We got a bunch of different varieties of pumpkin and are like taste testing them for what they're good for and what we like, and linking to a bunch of different recipes. So you should really check out Tutorial Thursdays. Like, while I'm talking later and you're bored, you should go check it out, because you're going to be like, wow, this is cool. And I check out your stuff. So that's what you should do. But
no excuse. I apologize.
It's okay.
I'd say it's something like, I've been busy, but like, clearly. So nope, sorry.
I think that we maybe should bring on our guest, and maybe
I'm super excited. It's going to be Canadian Power Hour.
I know. It's going to be so painful for me.
We're going to find as many opportunities to say we're going out and about with avocado and cilantro as we possibly can, eh?
And we'll have three listeners 20 minutes into the show.
Are you kidding me? I am pretty sure there's some Canadians out there who are just started. They're already geeking out. They're already like, is she going to just say something like, I am, and then just leave it? And then, oh, see, there's cheering. I can hear the cheering right now. I can hear the cheering.
That's just the voices in your head. You're starting to lose it a little bit.
There's Canadians out there cheering.
I think that we should bring in our guest, because you're starting to lose it, and maybe she can bring us back to reality. So
welcome, Cindy, to the show.
Hello, ladies. How are you?
No, okay. So, would you cheer if I just said, I am?
Obviously. Actually, you know what would be perfect is my husband is here now watching hockey.
There you go.
Toronto Maple Leafs in the background.
I don't even get this reference.
No,
that's you don't get the of course you don't get the I am Canadian reference.
Hockey night in Canada.
Oh, okay, I love
that's
hockey
usually
night.
Saturday, but you know,
I got nothing.
Do you ever get to go to games, Cindy?
Yeah, we go quite frequently because we're right here in Toronto, so literally it's like 15 minutes from our place, so it's not too far at all.
Oh my gosh. I lived right downtown too when I lived in Toronto. We were right beside the Sky Dome.
Yeah.
And yeah, we were in the City Place condos like back when there was only five of them.
Yes. And now there's a million and one.
Now there's a million. But yes, we were in the fifth out of five back way a long time ago.
Stacey, have you been to Toronto?
I have never been to Canada. It's not something that I'm opposed to, but I don't know that I know where my passport is. And the only time I've ever even used a passport to leave the country is when I went on a cruise and I didn't actually get to use my passport. I think that I'm allowed to enter and leave Canada without one, but I'm a little bit freaked out about leaving the country.
You need a passport to enter Canada.
Okay. So yeah, I actually thought about doing it for our tour, Sarah, like putting it on when we were in the New York, Chicago area and doing like a Toronto stop on that side. But the Canadian book selling release date thing is kind of complicated, and I wasn't sure that my book would be available in Canada only.
Maybe it's something that we could add on our to-do list for like the new year. January in Toronto. Wait a minute. Let's wait till May.
Yeah,
come in January.
So I definitely have plans to go there someday. I actually would like to go to the waterfall in New York. That's a thing, right? What am I thinking of?
Niagara Falls.
Niagara Falls. And like do a little like northeast tour and take it into Canada. I really like car trips because you can stop and sightsee and do a lot of stuff like
Well,
that. So,
Niagara's awesome,
yeah.
so.
So that's been my plan is like once someday Matt and I will do that.
Oh,
And
so
it just hasn't happened.
you're like uninviting me. Like there I was like, we should go to Toronto together, and you're like, yeah, I'm gonna go on a
Well, it's
cross
not to say
tour.
that I can't do both.
Well, you guys are both welcome to stay with us anytime.
Aw,
So,
thank you.
Cindy, maybe you could tell people a little about who you are. So, Sarah did the introductions, and it's always incredibly awkward when Sarah and I get out of the roles that we're usually in. So, Cindy joins us from Paleo Dish is the name of your blog, correct?
Correct, yes.
And you've recently published a book about five ingredients or less paleo, which I think a lot of people are interested in. We actually have a tag in our book that sorts recipes in charts, and one of the things that we did was five ingredients or less, because I know that a lot of people get really overwhelmed with long lists of ingredients. So I think it's cool, and maybe you could tell people a little bit about yourself, your blog, your book, and let them
Yeah,
get
so
familiar with you.
for sure. So I guess it was back in 2009, I was introduced to the whole paleo lifestyle thing. I reconnected with one of my friends who I lived with at university, and he's actually an owner of a strength and conditioning gym in Cornwall. So at the time, it was a CrossFit gym, and now he's a weightlifting gym. So we reconnected, and he's like, "Hey, have you heard about this whole paleo thing?" And I was like, "What?" I was pretty much like, "Paleo, huh? What are you talking about?" And so anyway, started doing a little digging around and a little research, and he started talking about CrossFit. He's like, literally, he's like, "Sin, there's one 10 minutes from your house. You need to go check it out." And I did, and we've been at CrossFit Toronto ever since. Back in 2009, I was kind of one of those early entry people that got to see Rob Wolf do his thing when he was back doing his nutrition certs with CrossFit.
I
And
missed the opportunity to do that. His last one was, I think, like in New York or something, and I, like an idiot, didn't go, and I really have regretted it. I had like a newborn, so I couldn't, but I'm totally jealous that you got to go see one of his seminars before he stopped.
yeah, and him and Matt Lalonde, they were actually tag team. They did one together when they came to Toronto, and Matt's Canadian as well. Dun, dun, dun.
Yes,
Yeah.
another Canadian moved south.
Yes.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I saw a couple of their seminars and just sort of started doing a little bit more research on my own. And at the time, I was, I'm not sure if you guys have read my story, if you're familiar or your listeners are familiar, but my mom passed away suddenly. She passed away from a heart attack. And after that, it was sort of a bit of a downward spiral for me. So when I reconnected with my friend Tyler Touchett from Caveman Strong in Cornwall, it was sort of just that, I don't know, I guess you say that little pull that I needed and something new that I needed to sort of get myself out of that rut. So that was kind of the catalyst of sort of changing my life and reorganizing my priorities to, I guess, the road to better health. Yeah.
I've seen, I actually have checked you out and saw your before and after pictures, and they're pretty darn inspirational.
Thank you. As are both of you.
Yeah, I had no idea. We met at Bill and Haley's wedding, and I apologize if we met before that. I guess we probably met at PaleoFX or something, but I remember actually talking to you in a comprehensible way at Bill and Haley's wedding. And at that time, I had no idea that you'd had like a transformation story, and just thought that you were like the cutest little nugget of like, you've got a huge smile, and I had no idea you were Canadian. I had no idea about anything. I was probably drunk, but I was definitely drunk on sugar. That cookie buffet was a problem for me. So,
oh my God, the Jenny's ice cream.
I was like Jenny's ice cream at the rehearsal dinner, and then it was like the Pittsburgh cookie table at the wedding, and it, I mean, I had been training and eating clean, and I had told myself, I'm going to relax this weekend, and it hit me like a ton of bricks. So, So then when I saw your after photos after we had met, I was like, no way, because I'm actually really good at picking out people who've lost a lot of weight or had a transformation. Like, there are things that I can detect about their skin or their hair or whatever that kind of tip me off to people having a change like that. And I had no clue. And I was like, that can't be the same person. But it was. It was you.
I know. It's funny enough. Like, that's the reaction of, quite a few people. And aside from losing the weight, like, I tell everybody that for me, it was, aside from the physical, it was more the mental change. And after my mom passed away, there was a period there where I was experiencing a lot of anxiety and panic attacks and just overall, depression. And so for me, although the benefits of losing the weight were nice, it was more the change in what I was putting in my body and what food I was eating and how that was affecting my mental state. So that was huge for me. That was a big, big, big change.
And so what brought you to blogging and cookbook writing?
So I started my blog, it was probably 2009, 2010. And the owner of the CrossFit gym that I started back then, his name is John Vivian. He's still the owner here in Toronto. We still attend there. He's a real sort of computer techie guy. So he's like, you know what? He's like, you're creating all these recipes. Why don't you start a blog? He's like, I can help you with it. No problem. So we started that back in 2009. And I guess most recently, I was nudged by Diana Rogers and Julie Sullivan of Paleo Comfort Foods. And they were both like, you should write a cookbook. And it was through Page Street Publishing. So they published Diana Rogers' book, Paleo Breakfast and Lunch on the Go. And so they sort of gave me a gentle sort of nudge, and that sort of got the ball rolling. And yeah, it's been the last couple of years sort of in the works and coming up with recipe development and talking to the publisher within the last year and sort of, narrowing down the idea of coming up with a minimal ingredient recipe cookbook. So that's sort of how everything started, the idea was born.
Do you find that in your regular job that's the way that you end up cooking, or kind of what drew you to the simplified cooking approach? Because I've seen some of the recipes and things that you shared from the book, and they all look and sound delicious. There's one particular, I think it's like an apricot chicken recipe where I was like, that sounds really delicious. Dates. It's dates, isn't
it?
Yeah. I have a thing with dates.
You have a thing with dates.
Yeah. Yeah. That one's super yummy. And you know what? My husband, Dustin, and I will laugh and we'll joke, and we don't cook. And you guys probably know this too. We don't cook like crazy, huge, complicated meals all the time. Like literally tonight it was hard boiled eggs and sardines. You know what I mean? So we're pretty.
Oh, we know what you mean.
You guys totally know. We're pretty like simple, pretty easygoing. So we definitely knew that we wanted easy and simple and sort of approachable for people who maybe are just coming into paleo, recipes that weren't overwhelming and things that could be done pretty fast in the kitchen. There's some that are a little bit more labor intensive, but we didn't want recipes with a huge long list of ingredients that we might not have in our kitchen or whoever's reading the book might not have in their pantry or the refrigerator. So that's kind of what we wanted to zero in on with the book.
Cool. And so what do you do when you're not blogging and cookbook writing? And going to weddings.
So for the last, this is my 12th year teaching. So I'm a certified teacher here in Ontario. So I live in Toronto, Canada. So I've been teaching for the last 12 years. And the last 3 years, I've actually been teaching full-time phys ed and health, which is amazing, which is like right up my alley and right in my wheelhouse. So it's like literally my full-time job, but it's like a dream. Like it's amazing. So yeah, that's what I've been doing for the past 12 years is teaching. Prior to that, I was in quote unquote regular classroom, like teaching either grade 5 or grade 6. You guys say fifth grade. We say grade 5.
We also say college, and Sarah's informed me that that's absolutely not the right word. So
no, if you go to college in Canada, yeah, that means community college.
Yes, so, say university. So what do you guys say to differentiate between the two?
Community college.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, it's just our thing.
Yeah.
But here, college and university are interchangeable, and then it's community college or local college, you know.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah.
So
full-time gig, yeah, Monday to Friday.
Sarah, I think you had some ideas on what we could explore with Cindy, given that she has a unique background, and I'm personally fascinated to hear kind of how she marries and approaches some of the different things about how paleo people think in terms of health and what the school system teaches my children here, at least, about health. So I don't know if you had anything else you wanted to ask or if you kind of wanted to jump into.
I think we should jump in because I think Cindy has a really unique experience and perspective. And I wanted to do a show, and I've been wanting to do this for a while, about how to teach our kids good, you know, healthy habits, both in terms of, you know, choosing food, but also in terms of lifestyle, in a way that encourages them to continue making good choices as adults. And in part, this comes from, you know, me growing up and as a young adult, you know, becoming morbidly obese and making not good choices with lifestyle and not good choices with food, and then having to figure that out later. And I would like to, if I can, I'd like to save my kids from that experience. And so, you know, it's one of those things that I think about often, about, you know, what was it about how I was brought up, my experiences in school and what school taught me, what I learned from different family members, what was it that, you know, created a situation where I developed an eating disorder and where, you know, I didn't have any active hobbies and, you know, didn't seek out any kind of activity other than walking to the bus stop. And how do I, you know, how do I raise my kids so that they want to be active, so that they enjoy things that are active, so that they understand good food and not just understand it. I mean, like, I'm pretty sure I knew that eating the family size bag of M&Ms in one sitting was like not a good health food choice, but I, you know, like I still did it. So how do I not just educate my kids, but motivate them to make those choices as adults? And so I thought it'd be really interesting for us to sort of talk about that perspective. And clearly it's going to be a fairly theoretical conversation, but to talk about what you and I, Stacey, are sort of doing with that in mind, but also to add Cindy's perspective as a teacher and a teacher who teaches, you know, physical education and health. You know, how do you encourage the formation of these healthy habits in kids? So we should probably start with something like a smaller piece of that.
Yeah, I can start off. No.
Well, I would love to know what your overall approach is in the classroom, Cindy.
Okay. So for me, I think that, as you mentioned, you know, you kind of reflect and you look at your background growing up and you sort of look at habits forming and this and that type of thing. But for me, I think the biggest sort of aspect that I like to emphasize with my students is exposing them to as many possible activities as possible. So I've kind of gotten away from the whole, I mean, when I grew up, it was like you were on the basketball team, you were on the volleyball team, you were on the soccer team. And to be honest, a lot has changed since then. And now I'm teaching yoga, and now I'm doing CrossFit classes, and now we're doing running club, and now we're doing walking club and environmental club that relates to nutrition and food. So I think that it's exposing students to a bigger and wider opportunity to find something that really suits them and suits their personality and suits their interests. And I guess something that, you know, they can become really engaged in and passionate about. And, you know, Stacey, for you, it was the strong woman thing. So, you know what I mean? Finding something where you're like, yeah, you know, this is where I feel like I belong. This is where I feel like I can improve and excel. So I think just offering as many opportunities as myself, you know, teaching in the gymnasium at school, but also other teachers who offer different clubs and extracurricular activities, is just sort of giving them as much choice possible to find something that they can zero in on and focus on. I think that that's huge.
You must have a fairly large variety in sort of the family life of your students. So, I mean, I would expect that you would have some students who come from families where like everyone in the family is really active, and other students where, you know, everyone's very sedentary and they're not getting those good active role models at home, and then everything in between those two extremes. Do you notice that, you know, certain types of students resonate better with that approach and are picking up more hobbies? Is it, you know, students who have the active role models at home are, you know, happier participants in the things that you're teaching? Or do you find that it's just, you know, once you get that match of, you know, personality with activity, that's when it clicks and it doesn't really matter what the home role models are?
Yeah, I definitely know what you're saying. I think that I teach a lot of my classes where it's teaching skills and teaching different sports and games through understanding of games through different activities. So it's you're sort of teaching that progressive learning. So it's not necessarily where they have to come in and know everything, and you kind of take that element of competition out of it in the beginning, where they, for example, today, we were doing yoga and we had all the yoga mats out. So everyone pretty much, you know, I was teaching a grade 3 class. So everyone pretty much feels like they're sort of on a, you know, a level playing field where it's not competitive. They're focusing on themselves. They're focusing on their breathing and relaxing. So they're just sort of, you know, we really like to focus on participation and trying your best and personal improvement, personal gains, personal goals, that type of thing. And in the regular sort of everyday, taking that competition side out of it, granted there are teams and stuff after school that are a little bit more competitive, but just giving students that opportunity to, I think, feel that they're a part of something and feel that they're a part of a team or that they're a part of a club or a community gives them so much self-confidence. Because to be honest with you, a lot of them don't have the opportunity after school. They're not in different sports. They're not in different clubs. So they don't have that sense of, you know, I'm part of this. But if you sort of open up the floor and give them that chance to all be at a little bit more of an equal playing field in the beginning, you really see certain individuals soar regardless of, you know, what the home life might be or the background of the family. So that's, you know, that's a huge sort of difference.
That's really cool. I wasn't exposed to things like yoga until university. And, but for me, I did, PE 11, which I don't know if it's different in Ontario, but in British Columbia, it was an elective.
Yes.
And, we did mountaineering and, which was really cool. We, hiked Mount Albert Edward, which it was a 4-day hike, 2 days to the summit, 1 day at the summit, and then 1 day down. And then we were exposed to, like, that was sort of like one half of the year. And then the other half of the year was spent doing activities that were designed to be more active hobbies. So yeah. It was designed, you know, like we did bowling.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. I think that was the most like out of the box thing we did though, because really what we were doing was like learning all the regulations of different sports. And, you know, I am even still now a better sort of slow and steady type person than I am with speed. And that was especially true for me back then. And so I did really well with hiking because I enjoyed walking, but anything else we did, I wasn't good at. So I wasn't good at, you know, we did rock wall climbing and I just didn't have any upper body strength. And I was a heavy kid even back then. So it just, you know, it wasn't something I could do. And then any sport which involves, you know, some speed and some agility and being able to, you know, change directions really quickly, being able to run. And I wasn't very good at any of those. And what I found was as much as I enjoyed the mountaineering section of PE, the rest of it just completely took all the joy out of any kind of activity for me. And it made me sort of feel like I can't do any of this. They opened up a weight room in my high school the next year. And I think maybe if I had been exposed to weightlifting, I might have found something that I enjoyed more, because that's definitely stuff that I enjoy now. And we didn't have any, you know, there was no yoga or Pilates or dance or any of these other things that I think I might have resonated with better personally. So it's kind of neat to hear about these things that were so outside the box, you know, for, okay, it was like a million years ago that I was in high school. But, you know, to hear that if this is something that's being introduced, you know, that was the only year that in my entire, you know, grade school education where PE had anything other than sports and running and sit-ups and push-ups. And so, so it's really neat to hear that you're introducing these sort of different kinds of activities and different ways of moving your body to such young kids, because that didn't exist a million years ago.
It's interesting. Finn told me the other day that, a lot of the movements that they do in PE for warm-up are things that he did in CrossFit. And he was like, yeah, they have us do push-ups and jumping jacks and burpees, and I already know how to do all those. He was so proud of himself. It's like, you know, first grade PE. And for me, I don't remember elementary school PE. I remember high school PE, and I remember it being much more about, like, a cool kids club. And I remember being part of the not very well behaved group of kids who would sneak back into the locker room and do activities that we shouldn't have been doing, and avoiding exercise at all costs, because if you were actually into physical exercise in PE, then you weren't cool according to our standards. And I remember doing the tour of a weight room at one point and having everybody do a leg press. And I remember having a leg press stronger than the boys at that time and feeling really awkward and uncomfortable about it. And just being like, because they have everybody, you know, whatever it was we were doing, it was like, okay, now everybody, it was like a, rather than PE is usually an unstructured environment or was when I was in it, this was like a, okay, we're going to teach you how to use the equipment and everybody has to get on and show me that you can do it correctly kind of thing at the beginning of the year. And I kind of think back to that sometimes now that I'm lifting weights and feeling really great about it and wondering, like, had I been in with a different group of people or had I had more self-confidence or, you know, had the circumstances been different, would I have realized then that I was stronger and could it have changed my trajectory for health? And I don't in any way blame teachers or anybody for my inability to recognize that and do it. But I wonder too, like, what is it that we can do about the process and the structure of that environment to change it so that it does kind of enable and encourage people to find those things rather than what I assume PE still is, which is, you know, you go smoke cigarettes in the locker room. So I don't know. I mean, is that something that's still happening or do you not, you're in a different school, so you might not even know that, but I wonder, like, with your colleagues or whatever.
Yeah, I teach at a K-8 school. So, the highest grade is grade 8. So it's not high school yet. And I teach primarily kindergarten to grade 4. So they're still quite young. And then another teacher, he does all the sort of junior intermediate students. So I think he has more sort of issues with that type of thing that you were talking about. But I mean, the amazing thing, and I think another huge factor is that the admin that I work for and the principal and the vice principal at my school are huge supporters of physical activity and physical fitness and, you know, in any sort of shape or form. So I think if you have that sort of backing and that support behind your school, as well as not just me, but other teachers around the school that are sending the same message of the importance of, you know, not just structured sort of PE stuff, but a lot of it is about, you know, just exploring and taking them outside. We have a huge yard and playing and practicing and, you know, doing different movements. And I think just getting them outside and getting them moving and then bringing them back in and they're doing their language and their math and, you know, their science. I think the connection between, and I mean, Sarah, you probably know better about this, but the connection between, you know, the body moving and the mind is just fascinating. So we've seen so many improvements at our school with that.
Yeah, my kids' elementary school, they actually take the kids out for a run around the field before they do standardized testing, because they've actually found that it improves their test scores. It's purely a blood flow thing. So there's basically two things that increase blood flow in the brain. One is physical activity and the other is, you know, cognitive or intellectual activity. So, you know, working on a puzzle or learning something new increases blood flow to the brain, and then being physically active increases blood flow for the brain. And there's tons of benefits to increasing blood flow to the brain. Mm-hmm. And so they're basically, by being physically active before you're thinking, you actually are prepping the brain by getting the blood flow going before, like, faster. So that's why that strategy is used to increase standardized test scores all over the place.
Yeah. I mean, even last year and the year before, I organized at lunchtimes, I would do like a structured boot camp class with the teachers. So the teachers would come in and they would come in, not a crazy long workout, but we do, you know, like a 15-minute, half an hour little CrossFit workout. And then they would go back, have their lunch, and they would feel so much better for the afternoon than the classes that they were teaching in the PM. It was just amazing to see that, you know, that little boost of getting the blood flowing and then back to the classroom, and they felt so much better too. So yeah, I did that the last 2 years.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
I wish I had that at my work, except my work is in my house. So, and it's by myself. So that sounded so sad and pathetic, didn't it? I love working from home and being my own boss. So I didn't mean that to sound pathetic.
Yeah.
So So I guess I have two questions. I think the majority of our listeners are going to want to know two things. One, in a school environment, what can they do as parents to help and encourage their children to be successful in this kind of lifelong physical activity, health motivation standpoint? From your perspective, like, what do you think is the number one or top three kind of recommendations that you would give parents to encourage, whether it's, you know, a way that they phrase things or something that they can actually do or whatever the case may be? And then secondly, for those people who are homeschooling their children and who don't have a separate physical class to take their children to in terms of PE, how would you suggest kind of structuring that physical exercise into the day-to-day, especially given how much easier it would be in that kind of environment, you know, if you can give thought to those ideas? Yeah, for sure.
So for the first thing, actually, I just read an article online. I'll try to dig it up, and then maybe you guys can post it to the show notes. But for the first thing, I think that, and I'm not a parent, so I'm not speaking to everybody, but I think with certain parents and a lot of parents that I know, just friends of mine, you know, they feel this pressure that they have to have their children in a million and one things. And I think that's starting to change, but I feel like, you know, they're in soccer, they're in baseball, they're in hockey, you know, they're in football, they're in dance. And to be honest with you, I think the children can get burned out and then they're totally like, I don't want to do any of this. So I think maybe scaling back, number one, and not pushing it, asking them, you know, what they're interested in and not forcing them to do things. I think that that's a huge thing. And like I said, I'm not a parent, so I'm not judging or I'm not, you know, giving parental advice, but that's sort of what I see from a teacher perspective, is giving them just the time to chill and giving them the time to play and explore and find out what they like. And, you know, it doesn't have to be 5 days a week. So I think maybe just scaling that back. And then the second thing that you mentioned, the homeschooling thing, I even like to try to do this at the school I'm at, but I think if you're homeschooling, maybe the access to the outdoors is key. And also what comes to mind is regular, frequent breaks. I know when I'm at work or even working from home, doing stuff on the weekend, like getting up and moving and taking regular breaks, that's a huge thing. Sitting for too long, you know, we all know isn't good, right? So I think getting up and moving around regularly is huge. And also to people that are homeschooling, dig around on the internet. There's so many resources, and I can link to a couple of them as well. If they don't have like a regular sort of phys ed program going, what they could, you know, get going with their children that might be helpful.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Mm-hmm. So, Stacey, maybe you and I should talk a little bit about anything that we do from the, you know, home side, and especially as I think mothers who are trying to help their kids have different experiences than we had growing up with our weights. What do you do in particular? You know, what's your sort of, I don't know, what do you do with the boys to encourage them and to enjoy activity?
I think I lead by example. I don't know how else to do it. Well, I think we do two things. One, when we see their bodies getting what we called out of control, we identify it for them. We point out the things that they're doing that they don't normally do and tell them, okay, you need to go jump on the trampoline or you need to go do something, you know, for a little while. And we try to point out to them what's happening so that they can recognize it for themselves in the future. And then the other thing that we do is lead by example. You know, the boys join me very frequently in working out and that sort of thing. So I try to show them that using my body in a physical way is something that makes me happy and brings me joy and makes me proud of myself and feel accomplished. And I see that reflected in them because they say, hey, I want to try picking up that stone, or I want to try pulling that sled. And when they do something, seeing that sense of accomplishment is both, you know, I'm proud as a mom, but I also can tell that it's encouraging them to want to do it again, a different time. So, we don't really have formal sports that we do in the summertime. We have a pool membership. So, you know, swim with the kids as often as Matt could get to the pool, or, you know, stuff like that. But the boys play outside a lot. They are often told to go outside. We are very, old school traditional in, we have a very suburban neighborhood and a fenced yard and it's safe here. And we just tell them, like, go outside, you know, like, just, you need to go outside. And we've tried to encourage the older boys to explore a little more too. We told Cole we'd get him a walkie-talkie. We have, creeks and paths and all kinds of cool things here. And, we told him, you know, you're old enough. If you want to ride your bike down and go exploring a trail, like, take a walkie-talkie with you, you know, take a friend or whatever, and go, you know, find frogs and turtles and whatever. So, I mean, that's what Matt grew up doing. And, I wasn't very physically active, and the way that he talks about, like, not seeing his parents during daylight, but that he had to be within shouting distance or in a friend's yard that his mom could call, like, basically she had to be able to contact him, was the only rule until dark. And that was something that sounded really cool and special to me. And I, wanted to be able to give that to the boys. And it's interesting that several neighbors have expressed concern over, you know, the boys being in the front yard and isn't that dangerous. And like, well, for who? Like, what do you know? Like, are you going to run them over with your car? Because if you drive safely, then I'm not really concerned. So, I think we've just taken a different kind of mentality where we're not like helicopter parents. And there are some things that I think that we probably should do a little bit better, but then for the most part, we just feel like they need to go out and explore and be physically active. And, we're busy. We've decided that, you know, sports, we can't commit to them. We don't have the kind of excess time in our own lives to be able to, you know, take the boys to team sports and that kind of stuff on the weekend. So the alternative for us is to do physical activities with them and to encourage them to do it on their own.
Yeah, I guess I kind of follow the same thing. So one of the things that I really loved about starting CrossFit was the fact that instead of me, you know, going to the Y and leaving the kids in the daycare area and then going and, you know, doing whatever it was, a yoga class or a strength class or whatever, and then picking them up, is that the kids are there. And, you know, when it's quiet or it's warm up, they can, my kids love to play on the rowing machines. They love to play on the rings. There's a little outdoor area that they love to play various games in, that's fenced in and isolated from the parking lot. And I love that they get to see me carving out time in my life for exercise, because that's one of the things that I really had to learn as an adult, is, you know, two things was sort of how to just increase my baseline activity, how to, you know, really enjoy being that person who parks in the farthest spot in the parking lot, or that person who always takes the stairs instead of the elevator. So part of it was sort of learning to be that person, but then the other part was learning to be the person who carves out time for activity and figuring out what activities I enjoy enough that I'm continually motivated to carve out time for them. So I love that they're seeing me do that. So I may or may not have told people on the podcast that I'm pretty loud when I lift heavy weights, and I tend to kind of scream a lot. And I am definitely the loudest person in my box, and I just do it, and I don't really have any control out of it. As soon as the weights get heavy, I get loud, and I get a lot of flack for it. So it's okay. You guys don't have to tease me, because I already get teased pretty much every time I go to CrossFit. My kids actually will hear me, and they'll like, if they're wherever they are, if they're in like the back kids room area, if they're outside, they'll like open the door and they'll be like, "Good job, Mom." As soon as they hear me like going, as I, you know, lift something heavy over my head. So it's actually kind of funny that they're, you know, seeing they've sort of learned that apparently it's okay to be extremely vocal when you're lifting heavy things. But you know, then you know, we have them in, they both take dance classes, which they both really, really enjoy. And then other than that, we do things like go walk to the playground or go for a family hike. Especially we like to go hiking in the winter when it's cooler. We don't so much enjoy hiking in the summer here, cause it's just way too hot. But that's sort of our like winter weekend activity, or we'll, you know, in the summer, maybe we'll go to the pool, or we'll just play in the backyard and run around and chase each other. And I try to have a lot of, try to have both structured and unstructured. So for them, they've got ballet and they've got, you know, the PE that they're doing at school. It's their structured time. And then they have just playing in the backyard and, you know, or going to the playground, or, you know, they have all this other opportunity to just be active. And whether, you know, sometimes they're playing outside and it's just sitting in the dirt, digging a hole, but I still think that's a far better activity for them to be doing than, you know, sitting in front of the television or something like that. So, you know, I try to put them in situations where something active, even if it's mildly active, is really fun, so that they have this great association of having fun with moving their bodies. And, you know, when we talk, you know, a lot about, we don't talk a lot about, it's not like I'm like brainwashing my kids, but we have conversations periodically about healthy choices. And they're often centered around, you know, so-and-so dropped a pretzel into my lunchbox at school today. Which I actually happened to my youngest daughter at school today. And she didn't tell me about it until after she'd eaten her whole lunch when she got home. I was not excited about that. Cause now she might not have a very good sleep. And so I need to know that and go to bed pretty soon. But you know, it's one of those things that we'll talk about, is not just the healthy choices in terms of, what foods are healthy foods, but we'll talk about why it's important to go to bed early, why it's important to be active, why it's important to laugh and have fun, why it's important to, you know, not worry about things. And I'm trying to sort of set the stage for more complex conversations about these topics later on.
Yeah. And I love, Stacey, I love that you mentioned the whole role modeling things, because as a teacher, I don't go in there and I'm like, you should eat this, you should do that, da, 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 da. But I think like kids are curious. And if I'm having my lunch or eating a snack and they ask, you know, what is that, an avocado? And I'm like, yeah. And some of them have never had one, or I'm, you know, I have guacamole, or I have, you know, beef jerky, and they've never seen it before. It opens up that dialogue and it opens up that conversation where you can have that chat. And I think it just opens everything up where, you know, sometimes just those things are sort of closed off or people are afraid to talk about. And I think, you know, maybe they don't chat too much about it at home with their parents sometime, but at school, it kind of gives them that opportunity to open up those lines of communication, I think.
Yeah, definitely. You have anything else, Sarah?
No, my brain shot off.
we've reached maximum capacity.
I'm curious, did she eat the pretzel, or what happened with the pretzel?
No, so the story that I got was that she, a kid beside her, dropped a pretzel into her lunchbox.
Right.
And then she took the pretzel, and then my daughter was worried that it might have dairy in it, because she doesn't really understand. She's really sensitive to dairy, and she doesn't really understand what might have dairy, what might have gluten. But So she was worried that it might have dairy in it. So she wasn't going to eat it. But then what my kids are always, I always make them finish their lunches before they have a snack when they get home. And so, you know, during snack time, I like gave her her lunchbox and asked her to finish it. And she didn't tell me about it at that time. So she was telling me that, yeah, she was worried it might have dairy in it, but it turns out it was really good. And I was like, what was really good? So I don't know if there was like salt, because she really likes salty foods. I don't know if there was like salt on her food from a pretzel dropping in, or if there was absolutely nothing and she thought it might ruin her food, but her food actually tasted normal. Like, she's four, right? So
right,
it could be really good, could mean a huge range of different things. I have no idea what she actually meant. I mean, I'll know in the next 2 days if it was gluten. but yeah, so I was not super excited about that. But it sounds like she did not actually eat the pretzel.
Right.
So that's good.
So just while we're on the topic of exposure, you know, I have a very different experience with Wesley than I have with the other two boys. And Wesley actually ate something in preschool last year that I forgot about until later this year, whereby they forgot that he couldn't have the treat that was being shared in the classroom, and gave him when he was 3 years old and had no idea how to, you know, detect for himself what he should or shouldn't be eating, cornbread. And I think in the teacher's mind, like, we have been very clear with them that if it's, we don't stay strict paleo when they do treats in the classroom, but that it has to be gluten-free. And I think the teachers were thinking at the time, like, oh, it's cornbread, it's made out of corn. And it was like a Thanksgiving feast, and so they gave it to him, and it wasn't until later that it had occurred to them that it actually was made with wheat flour as well. And so at that point, we kind of like, well, you know, we throw up our hands and we're like, thank you for letting us know. You know, we appreciate your honesty. If something happens, we'll let you know. He hasn't ever had gluten before, so this will be an interesting reaction to see how it goes. And like, he had zero reaction. He was still in diapers, so like, we knew exactly what was or wasn't happening. And he had a similar experience a couple of weeks ago at Russ's house. They had a barbecue, and he has no idea that people eat buns with gluten. Like, he knows that we're gluten-free, but he doesn't know that like bread has gluten, because he's four and he's never been around it. And Russ has had Russ was at the party, but it was actually Brent and Heather from Virginia for Hunter Gatherers. It was Brent's birthday. And unlike a party that we throw where there's never any buns, even if people who aren't gluten-free come, they had served rolls for the people who wanted to eat hamburgers on regular wheat rolls. And Wesley randomly went up to somebody with his long eyelashes and batted his eyes and said, can I have a bite of your hamburger? Because he's like little Rico Suave, and he's just a little bird, and he eats food from everybody. And normally it's totally fine, because he's surrounded by people who know what he can or can't have, or he's in his own environment, and therefore it's never a risk. And this person had no idea. They were a stranger, and a little cute, adorable kid came up and said, can I have a bite of your hamburger? And they were like, sure. And so I like saw the whole thing happening in slow motion, and it was like one of those things where I was like trying to get over there. And by the time that I got to him, like, I was trying to sweep his mouth for it, and Matt looked at me like I was crazy, and I was like, I don't want him to have gluten. Like, I'm like trying to put my hand in his mouth to retrieve it back, and Matt's like, it's gonna be fine, like, it's gonna be fine, don't worry about it. And Matt and I totally got into a fight about it later in the car, and I was like, it's not okay. Like, we should have pulled it out of his mouth and blah, blah, blah. Turns out it's totally fine. And, you know, it's interesting to me to think, as we talk about, like, lifelong health of children, the vast, vast difference of health response that Wesley, who's had the perfect opportunity for health gut. I mean, granted, I wasn't paleo when he was in utero, but, you know, even my breast milk was paleo. And then his first foods have been nutrient dense paleo foods. And we've focused on, you know, giving him the foods that nourish his body. And here, when he is exposed, he has zero reaction. And then my older two children, when they're exposed, they have very, very clear reactions. And so it's just, you know, in the context of why do we do this, and not giving your kids will give them a gluten intolerance, you know, I can't speak for everybody, and Wesley is his own person, and he could or couldn't have been gluten intolerant whether or not he'd been exposed. But I think for me personally, seeing what happens genetically in my family, being able to look at the other two children and see how they clearly have issues because of not having that opportunity for a clean, healthy gut, in my opinion. And then looking at Wesley, who has had that, and his body is able to process it without all of the inflammation and problems that the other two kids have and the reactions and systemic issues. And I'm hoping that over time, their bodies heal enough. They certainly have less reaction now than they did 4 years ago, just like I have less reaction than when I went originally on AIP. The goal is to get the kids to a healthy place where they, you know, don't have those experiences. And I know we didn't really talk about food today, but just you were talking about your kids and we're talking about trying to get our kids healthy for life experience. I thought it's fascinating. I don't know why I just went off on that tangent. I just can't help myself.
No, that's so interesting though. Like, so interesting that you say that.
It's especially interesting to me because there was a PaleoFX talk. I was on a panel with Chris Crosser a couple of years ago, and you know, I've said this and I've believed it, and I heard him say it and I believed it about how, you know, if you're reacting to foods, you're not healed. And, you know, there's a bell curve where, you know, you start off and you don't think you have a problem and then it gets worse and then it gets better. And I think for me to see kind of where Wesley is, where he didn't really have the front end of the bell curve because it was never bad. And now he's just at the end of the bell curve where he's been exposed to not an insignificant amount of gluten twice now that we're aware of. And we've seen zero reaction out of him. He also reacts less to sugar and those kinds of things when they do treats. Like, we don't see the same kind of reaction in him as we see in our other kids. So it's just kind of fascinating for me to see, you know, I can talk about this stuff and I can nominally say, yes, you know, there's evidence that as you heal, then you're able to tolerate these foods more. And people write Sarah and I all the time about, you know, we're nervous about not giving our kids gluten because we don't want them to be intolerant to it later. And now I can actually say that's not the case for my kids. And it's not to say that it, you know, will or won't be the case for somebody else. But for me personally, what I've been saying all along, you know, it's don't worry about it. It's not a problem. And now it's actually the case for my kids. So I feel a little validated for what that's worth.
Cool. So that was a fun show.
Yes. So thanks for joining us, Cindy.
Thanks for having me.
Canadians bond together.
Canadians unite.
not too many of you. We've got to keep you in check here in the U.S.
There's more and more of us moving here.
Yeah, who's keeping track? Who's letting you guys in?
I'm sure someone has us all on a registry somewhere.
I'm sure somebody's watching you. So again, if you want to try to find more from Cindy, her blog is Paleo Dish. And Cindy, can you tell them the release date and the name of your book and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, so technically, the book releases on October 21st, but in Canada, it's already released. It's already out in bookstores. They're ahead of the game, and it's already out online on Amazon.ca and Chapters Indigo, but it's still on pre-order. Well, by the time this show airs, it'll all be out and ready to go. But yeah, basically, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, independent bookstores, and Chapters Indigo, and you can check it out. It's called Paleo Takes Five or Fewer by Cindy Sexton.
Awesome. Well, thank you again for joining us. Sorry about my random tangent. I don't know what comes over me, but Sarah says it's likable sometimes, so there's that.
I love it. That's what makes your podcast, you know, genuine and real.
Soapboxes. And tangent.
Yeah. Sometimes not even on topic.
Actually, most of the time, not even on topic.
Cool. And I just want to remind people to check out the book tour information for Sarah and I on our blogs. Sarah and I, again, are doing some joint events as well as separate events. So if you go to the event page in Sarah's blog, which you can get to by the little event link in the sidebar of her blog, thepaleomom.com, or you can do the same thing at paleoparents.com, where we list all the events out. We are having a release party here in the DC metro area in actually Bethesda, Maryland. We're trying to cater to some of our non-Northern Virginia friends since we're doing events on November 1st and 2nd in Northern Virginia. So we're going to do our release party in Bethesda, Maryland on the 4th. And then Matt and I will be jet-setting around where Sarah says it's only 5 days together. And then Sarah and I will have 12 days together. So make sure you check out those events and sign up an RSVP. I also want to really encourage everybody while you're on Amazon checking out and pre-ordering Cindy's book to get on doing the same thing for Real Life Paleo, because I would appreciate it. And also it helps other people find the book. If you pre-order the book, you know, it helps the ranking and getting on the, you know, all the lists on Amazon so that they encourage other people to check it out if it's similar to and all that kind of stuff. So the more you're able to do that for us authors, the better off we are. And I know sometimes you're like, oh yeah, I've been meaning to do that. I've been meaning to do that. And then, you know, November 5th will come and you won't have your book and everybody else will, and you'll be frustrated. So if you just stop what you're doing right now, not while you're driving a car, go check it out. That would be great. And leave a review for the Paleo Approach and the Paleo Approach Cookbook while you're on there. And Beyond Bacon and Eat Like a Dinosaur, for that matter.
So everyone, now that you're done listening to the podcast, go do like 20 minutes of work.
Thanks.
Well, thanks everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, ladies.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.
Are you still stuffed up?
You know, life goes on. You be quiet. Do you guys need me here for this? You want me to just pop off?
We're just... let us be Canadian and bond for a second. Is it Halloween's show? We've got like creaky doors opening. Sorry, I'm sure my phone.
That's not going to work for me.
There's only two rings.
Creaky doors and ringing phones. Come on, people.
The first two.
Yep.
Just that's... wait. There'll be a cat meowing on my desk in about 5 seconds, and then we'll have a full awesomeness for Matt's bloopers.